This is Talking Business.
So I'm joined now by Matt Feehan, who's the forensic accounting partner at McGrath-Nicol Advisory. G'day, Matt.
Hi, Alan.
I hope I said your surname correctly.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Now, forensic accounting, so are you a kind of private detective within the McGrath-Nicol business?
Often referred to as certainly the private sector policeman, you might say. But forensic is anything before the court. It relates to dispute-related matters, so lots of litigation matters, civil matters. There's also corporate fraud, and then there's a lot of technology investigation matters these days. So it's quite...
What do you mean by technology investigation?
So cybercrime.
I see.
That's an area that probably for the last 15, 16 years we've been responding, but now you'll see a lot written about cybercrime and the threats to businesses and governments.
So you'd be seeing the dark side of business, really. Every day at work, you'd be seeing the not so pleasant side of business.
It certainly is. I often refer to it as sometimes we see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the fortunate side of what we do, I think each matter is different. It's not your some say mundane accounting side, but the incidents we look at are different in every way.
So tell us some of the cases that you've had.
So they range from, your accounts clerk who's defrauded an organisation. In one particular instance, it was someone who had come into the organisation, had been there for about 5 or 6 months and worked out how to manipulate EFT payments and proceeded to take $2.5 million from their employer and use that to gamble at the Sydney casino.
So who's your client? The employer is the client in that case.
That's
but
right.
I guess your work then finds its way to the police.
Yeah, that's right.
To the fraud police, who then use your work to lay charges.
That's right. So the police will prosecute. Ultimately, we're working for the client and in conjunction generally with lawyers, but also working closely with the police. So we do work closely with the fraud squad from time to time on criminal-related matters.
So how are you measured, in terms of your success or otherwise? Is it whether you get the money back or just catching someone?
I think the unfortunate nature is often with fraud cases in particular, the money's gone. It's either been gambled away or it's been used for some other purpose. I think success is uncovering the facts, getting to the detail, identifying where there have been control or shortcomings in business practices, and providing a clear understanding to board and also senior management as to the facts and those that were involved. Often there is a bit of a look back to see what caused this. Was there effective management oversight or was this allowed to happen and did it involve others internally and in many instances external, either clients or parties who have colluded with the fraudster?
And how much of your work is chasing a trail through sort of offshore tax havens and so on, multiple companies?
Well, I think it's quite timely. Obviously, Paradise Papers that have come out, but Panama Papers that were out about 18 months ago, 2 years ago. We do a lot of that, but often when we hit some of these tax havens, you hit a brick wall because you can't get behind the corporate veil and understand who are the beneficial owners or the... those that have ownership in some of those structures.
I got the feeling that there was more illegality with the Panama Papers than there was with Paradise Papers.
So that was very much Paradise Papers, very much tax structure, but it also gives us an understanding of who ultimately is behind some of the organisations. I think what I've seen over the last probably 5 years, there's a lot more rigour around due diligence in who people are doing business with. Now that's been around probably for 15 years if you look at the money laundering legislation, but it's now in contracting and who you're engaging to do business with, either in Australia but also internationally. They want to find out more about who's behind the particular entity. You see a BVI entity or shareholding in there, it raises more alarm. So what I've seen out of the Panama Papers, certainly there's more transparency around who are the parties behind some of these other organisations.
So are you able to get hold of these papers and feed the stuff into your databases for use later?
So I can talk from a particular experience with the Panama Papers. We certainly did hit a brick wall with one of the matters we were looking at for a client. And when those papers came out, it revealed details of the beneficial owners of a Hong Kong enterprise. And it certainly shed more light. So it was quite useful that the media were able to get release that information. It helped our client ultimately understand who was behind the organisation getting access. So we monitor that.
But there's apparently the Paradise Papers, there's 13.4 million documents. So there might be stuff in there that you'll be able to use at some point in the future.
So we're most interested in obviously what comes out, and as are our clients. Our clients are looking at that directly if they're mentioned in there at all.
So as you mentioned cybercrime. Obviously, the sense you get is that that's on the rise. Is that becoming more and more a part of your business?
So for a long time we've responded to cyber incidents, and whether that be data theft or hacking incidents to help organisations deal with an event when it happens and respond. But there's a lot more now focus on putting together frameworks to prevent that. It certainly is on the rise. And I think, if I mention one term or one method, but business email compromise, where people are sending in these false emails and asking for payment. And we've had many examples of that over the last probably 2 years, where there's been a huge increase, where the accounts department is asked to make a payment, but the email's purportedly from the CFO and or the CEO internally. So it's quite sophisticated, and I think that's where the real increase is coming. The resources that organised crime or these cyber criminals have available to them. I'm sure if you can, in one instance, it was a payment for $130 million that was transacted and affected by the client.
Somebody got an email saying, please pay $130 million, and they did.
They did.
Goodness.
Massive.
Well, a bit of a mistake right there,
yes.
You would think. I mean, is it leading to more external crime than internal? I mean, in the sense that because it's easier now to hack into businesses, I'm wondering whether previously you'd had more of the inside jobs to worry about than outside jobs.
Yeah, I think it's a fair observation because, someone's behind a computer screen. It's the faceless criminal, really. And the digital age and the ability to manipulate systems or create false documents which look authentic to you or I, gives them really an added edge. Previously, it would be hard copy documentation, the old check, check fraud and whatnot. It's certainly come a long way now.
So does it mean you have to kind of employ hackers yourself in order to be able to follow those trails?
So we've got forensic technology specialists, and a number of the partners that work in my practice, they're called in by law enforcement, by government agencies, also by private clients when they've had specific events. But they give expert evidence in relation to that. So, they know how to track the hackers, I suppose, or look at what evidence is left.
Well, in order to do that, I suppose you have to be a hacker yourself, or at least you have to know how to do it.
Yeah, some say the best are those who have done it before.
Poachers turn gamekeepers.
Yeah, that's it.
Springs to mind.
That's right.
So I guess you're getting busier and busier.
I wouldn't say busier and busier. I what I would say is, corporate fraud and misconduct continues. And I think what we've seen over the last probably 3-4 years in Australia is certainly an increase in regulatory activity. So, only over the last couple of months, we've seen a number of the bank issues to do with the bank bill swap rates.
That's right.
So regulatory activity with the Australian regulators and also international regulators around bribery and corruption is certainly creating more
And you've
events.
Also been involved in research into it with the University of New South Wales.
Yeah, that's right. So together with Professor Clinton Free and Paul Andon, we're doing research into, or we're assisting them doing research into workplace fraud and what the traits are. So they're interviewing up to 65 convicted fraudsters, but the output of that, as it continues to provide more data an insight from actual fraudsters as to what drove them to commit the fraud. The one thing I'd probably say where the research is at the moment, it appears that these fraudsters typically have what is termed a non-shareable event in their life. So they do have a secret, and that could be financial distress, short-term or long-term financial distress and the need for cash. It could be marital problems. It could be the instance where they believe they should have been remunerated more and they've made promises elsewhere, or it may be some other form of addiction.
A non-shareable event. Do you mean that they can't share it with their employer?
So they don't share it, so they've got a secret. And they're hiding that secret. So if it perhaps is a gambling addiction or it is a drug addiction or some other addiction, but there's some, what the researchers have coined, this non-shareable event in their life.
I suppose that by definition is hard to find out about ahead of time.
Well, it would be, particularly when you're trying to get information out of a fraudster. Generally, they're pretty good at covering their tracks.
Hmm. Well, then, on that note, we'll have to end it.
Great
talking to you, Matt.
You too, Alan. Thanks.
I've been talking to Matt Feehan, who's the forensic accounting partner at McGrath Nickel Advisory.